we'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's Crime Classics with the case of the seven-layered arsenic cake. But first, let's enjoy some adventure in the sky with Captain Midnight. Captain Midnight, one of the best-remembered serials of old radio, was on the air regionally in 1939 for the Skelly Oil Company. When Ovaltine dropped Little Orphan Annie in 1940, Captain Midnight became its replacement on Mutual. The show was created by Robert Burt and Winfred Moore, based on many of Burt's own World War I adventures. Burt conceived Midnight as a man of mystery whose job in the war was so important that not even his superiors knew his identity. We can tell you, he was Captain Red Albright, a super pilot who traveled the world battling evil. Captain Midnight was played then regionally by Billy Boucher and on Mutual by Ed Prentice. Five times a week, Captain Midnight came roaring out of the early evening sky, luring thousands of boys and girls into its secret squadron before folding on December 15th of 1949. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Captain Midnight. We'll listen to two episodes back-to-back from October of 1939. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Monday through Friday at the same time by the Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Jobbers and Dealers. The Skelly Oil Company, you know, was the originator of tailor-made gasoline. But now, here's a special tip for the fellas and girls who have not already joined Captain Midnight's new 1940 Flight Patrol. You'd better hurry up and join at once because there's a big adventure ahead. There's a real job ahead of us helping Chuck Ramsey and Patsy Donovan and our good friend Captain Midnight himself in a thrilling mystery. And every Flight Patrol member can take part in it when the time comes. But the thing to do now is to get started. Because we're going to have not only barrels of fun, but loads of free gifts and prizes, too, for every member of Captain Midnight's new 1940 Flight Patrol. Now, here's what you get as soon as you join. First, you get your official junior pilot's application card. And besides that, a burnished bronze medal of membership that's different from any club pin or button you ever saw. On the front, just like on a real Medal of Honor, are the faces of Captain Midnight and Chuck and Patsy. And also the mysterious secret password that only Flight Patrol members themselves can tell the meaning of. But that's not all. On this medal is a three-blade airplane propeller that will spin like a top. On the other side is the face of a mystic midnight clock. You look to see where the hands of the clock are pointing when they stop spinning. It helps you decide things like who goes to the store for mother or who's captain of the team. Why, say, you'll use the spinning medal 100 different ways. But most important, this medal proves you're a member of the new 1940 Flight Patrol. You see, only members can take part in the big adventure ahead and get all the other free gifts that are coming. So you'll want to join and get your medal of membership right away. But now, and here's the best part of all, it doesn't cost you a single penny. No box tops or seals or anything. Here's all you do. Just have mother or dad drive you over to your Skelly service station and tell your Skelly man you want to join the new 1940 Flight Patrol. He'll give you your official application card right away, and he'll send right into Skelly headquarters for your free Medal of Membership with the three-blade spinning propeller and the mysterious secret password. But hurry now, won't you? See your friendly Skelly man and join the new 1940 Flight Patrol tonight. And now to Captain Midnight. Fortune, good and bad, is helping and hurting Captain Midnight and his friends. In the upper end of the valley, on the outskirts of the vast Pareda estate, now controlled illegally by Ivan Sharp, Captain Midnight and Chuck Ramsey rescued a hard-pressed fugitive from his pursuers, who, after he was revived, whispered that his name is Juan Pareda. Our scene today is again with Pareda, shortly after he regained consciousness. Chuck is speaking.
You're Juan Pareda?
Yes, senor. I am Juan Pareda.
Juan Pareda. I see it, Chuck. I see the whole thing now.
You are Major Barry Steele?
Red, he must know Major Steele.
No, he doesn't, Chuck, or he wouldn't ask. You were expecting Major Steele?
No, senor. I did not hope for such good luck.
But you knew his name.
I do not understand.
Well, do you know of him?
Si, senor. Major Steele. He was a good friend of my wife, Senora Pareda.
That's what Major Steele told us.
But, Senor Pareda, why did you mention Major Steele's name?
My daughter, Dolores, she wanted to write letters to Major Steele. But then, I do not see her anymore.
Well, what happened to her?
I do not know, senor. I am very much afraid I will never see her again.
Gosh, Red, that's terrible.
We've got to get his story, Chuck, but I'm afraid he's too weak to tell it.
What do you say, senor?
Listen, Senor Pareda. My friend and I wish to help you.
That is good, senor. I need help very much.
I'm afraid he's going to faint, Red. He doesn't look very well.
Yes.
I feel very sick, senor. My lips, they are so dry. Please, I need some more water.
Yes, quick, Chuck. Give him some more water. Tip your helmet up there so we can drink. Hurry.
There you are, senor.
That is so good.
Gee, Red, that's helping him a lot.
Yes, you bet it is. Some more water, senor?
Please, a little bit more.
There you are.
Is that enough?
That is plenty.
Oh, wait. Don't throw that water away, Chuck. I'm going to wring my handkerchief out and wipe his face.
Okay, Red, here you are.
Hold it. Okay, Chuck. You can throw the rest away now.
Right.
Senor. Now I feel better.
Gee, he's coming along swell.
Yes, you bet. Do you feel like sitting up?
Yes, senor.
Let's move him back a little so he can rest against the trunk of the tree.
Oh, well, that's the ticket. Here, get on this other side. Here.
Okay, I'm ready.
Easy now. There now.
Thank you so much. I feel much better now.
Do you feel like talking, senor?
Si, senor. I will be myself very soon.
I couldn't help seeing your back, senor. You have been wounded.
You see my back? Then you can guess.
They look like the marks of a whip.
Si, senor. I have been whipped. Just like you would whip some beast. But they have not broken me. They can never break the spirit of a Pareda.
I can see that, senor. But tell me why you were beaten.
It is a long story, senor. I do not know.
Oh, now, wait. We are friends of Major Barry Steele. We're here to help you. You mustn't be afraid to tell us your trouble.
Tell me, what do you call yourselves? What are your names?
My young friend here is Chuck Ramsey. As for me, my name doesn't matter.
But, senor, how shall I address you?
I am known as Captain Midnight.
El Capitan Midnight. The blackness of the night. What a strange name.
It is not one of my own choosing, senor.
The name, it does not matter. The man, he counts very much.
You will trust us, then?
Si, I will trust you. But I must warn you, we are all in danger. Enemies surround us.
Yes, we found that out all right. And let me remind you, Chuck, keep your eyes open.
I'm watching all around us, Red.
Good.
Your young friend, Chuck, he is very much on the alert.
Yes, senor. And Chuck has keen eyes. He'll see any enemies which may approach.
Good. Then I will begin. My name is Pareda, senor. And my family have lived in this valley for many years. Close to my hacienda, there is a small chapel and a graveyard. And on one stone, which is crumbling with age, you will see the numerals 1651.
Blazing beacon, the year 1651.
See, in that grave lie the bones of Francisco Pareda, who was a mighty general in the Imperial Army of Spain. These lands were given him by the king.
An original Spanish land grant, huh?
That is right, senor. The Pareda family owns this valley and many others nearby.
It's a beautiful place, Senor.
Nowhere in the world is there such a valley, Senor. I love it as my family before has loved it.
Well, when did the present trouble start?
A month ago, Senor. But I wish to explain something.
Yes?
When I was a young man, I studied in a university in Spain. And there, studying music, was a beautiful American girl. I married her, Senor, and brought her back with me to the valley.
She was a very good friend of Major Barry Steele and his wife. Is that not so?
That is true, Senor.
I see.
I did not have the pleasure of meeting Major Steele and his Senora. To be truthful, I did not like to leave this valley. But my wife, she had the desire that our daughter should study in her mother's country. So I sent her to school in Washington.
And there she became well acquainted with Major and Mrs. Steele,
huh? Si, Senor. She visited at the home many times.
Senora Pareda, she's not living now?
No, Senor. 2 years ago, she died. Go on to the better world.
I am very sorry, Senor.
Life is not the same now, Senor. But then, we must all be brave. I still had my beautiful Dolores. But now, she too is gone.
You mean she's dead?
I do not know. But if they have made her suffer as I have, I hope, Senor, she is dead.
Well, who do you mean by they?
I am coming to that. About a month ago, we had visitors in this valley. A thing which is very rare.
Who were these visitors?
They were Americanos, Senor, like yourself. But they were different. Very different. You are good and honorable, but they are Finns.
Well, just a minute. How did these visitors arrive?
They arrived from the air, Senor, just as you. They had an airplane with a big cabin, and they come down and land, and they say they have the engine trouble.
Uh-oh. They pretended to have a forced landing.
See, that is the name they call it. So, since they say they are Americanos, I make them come into my hacienda. I treat them as the honored guests.
What were their names?
Their names, Senor? I remember that very well. There was a father and his daughter. He says his name is Senor Douglas Chadwick, and she is the Senorita Chadwick.
Please, then, beacons red. That was Ivan Shark and his daughter Fury.
Yes, Chuck, I'm sure of it.
When I see you fly the black plane, I'm very much afraid. I do not think you will help me. But then, when you fire the gun at my enemies, my hope becomes very strong.
Well, you see, Senor, this black plane is not the one we came in. No, but never mind. I'll explain that to you later.
Very good, Senor. I will go ahead with my story.
Yes, please do.
I raised a very big herd of cattle. Thousands upon thousands. This Senor Chadwick, he becomes very much interested in my cattle. And he likes this valley very much.
The dirty crook.
We always have some trouble, Senor. There are bad men in these mountains, and they sometimes steal my cattle. So, Senor Chadwick, he tells me I should guard my cattle with airplanes.
So you bought some airplanes?
Si. This Senor Chadwick, he says he has the connection. He can buy the airplanes for me, so I signed the contract with him. Also, this Senor Chadwick, he has the radio on his airplane. He sent the order for me.
Yeah, this is running true to form, Chuck. Sounds just like one of Ivan Shark's tricks.
And then, very soon, the airplanes arrive. There are very many pilots and very many mechanos. But these men are very bad, Senor. I look at them and I know, and my heart becomes very troubled.
And you had good cause to be. Well, then what happened?
This Senor Chadwick is very clever. Some of my people talk, and he finds out I have a fortune, besides the lands and cattle.
Well, what kind of a fortune? Well, that is, if I may ask.
I will tell you, Senor, because I can trust you. This fortune is in precious stones of great richness.
Did Chadwick get hold of them?
No, Senor. That is why you see the marks of the whip upon my back. He does not know, and he never will. But you are my friend. I will tell you.
No, no, no. Please, Senor Pareda. Don't tell me. Keep it always to yourself.
Si, Senor. Perhaps that is better after all.
Now, what did Chadwick do? He was your guest. Well, how did he...
That I will tell you. When I signed the contract with Senor Chadwick, I trust what he says. I do not read all the words carefully. But after the airplanes arrive, he comes to me and demands a big sum of money. 100 times bigger than I have agreed to. Then he shows me the contract. And I see I've been tricked.
Can you imagine that?
Then I lose my temper. I say, you talk of an Americano, you get out. You take your airplanes and you go. And do not come back again.
Yes, and then?
This man, he sees me. My daughter, Dolores, she disappeared. The Senor Chadwick, he tells me Dolores will be killed unless I write the letter he demands. So I am beside myself. I do not know what to do. I write the letter. I ask for Dolores, but I do not see her. I'm taken away to the Black Cave. They ask me for my jewels, my fortunes. And when I do not reply, they whip me.
It seems incredible, Red. I just can't believe...
Second, Jack. Wait a minute. We've got to act now, and we've got to act quick. Now, listen, Senor Pareda. We must have some help. Are there any of your people who can help us?
Some of my best men have fled to the mountains, but I believe I can find them.
Oh, that's splendid. We must find them at once.
Unless, Senor, this Chadwick has found...
drowned and killed her.
Oh, that fiend of a shark, I'll...
Listen, Red.
What? It's a plane, Chuck. There it is. A black one. Flying directly this way. Quick. Get behind that machine gun in the rear cockpit and get ready for action.
Well, Senor Juan Pereda has told a pitiful story. The fiendish Ivan Shark is running true to form. But at the moment, Captain Midnight and his friends are in an extremely dangerous predicament. It looks as if they'll have enough to do to save themselves, let alone helping Senor Pereda. What will the resourceful Captain Midnight do? Tune in tomorrow to Captain Midnight. Now, an important word to you fellows and girls. You don't want to be left out when the big adventure comes, do you? You don't want to miss out on all the free gifts and prizes that are coming. So get your official application card in Captain Midnight's new 1940 Flight Patrol right away. And have your Skelly Man sent in for your free Medal of Membership with the three-blade spinning propeller and the mysterious secret password. Remember, it doesn't cost you a cent. Not even a penny for a stamp. Here's all you do. Have Mother or Dad drive you over to your Skelly service station tonight. Tell your Skelly Man that you want to join the new 1940 Flight Patrol, and he'll do the rest. Now, don't forget to tune in again tomorrow, same time, same station, for further transcribed adventures of Captain Midnight. Brought to you by the Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Jobbers and Dealers. Until tomorrow, this is Don Gordon, your Skelly Man, saying goodbye and happy landing!
Listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Monday through Friday at the same time by the Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Jobbers and Dealers. But first, let me ask you something. How would you like to have a beautiful burnished bronze medal of membership to show that you're a special friend of Captain Midnight's and a bona fide member of his exciting new 1940 Flight Patrol? A medal that entitles you to take part in a great adventure and get lots of free gifts and prizes. A medal you'll be so proud to show your friends that you'll want to carry it with you wherever you go. It's made of heavy bronze with raised letters and pictures on the front and back, just like on a real Medal of Honor. It has a swell picture of Captain Midnight himself and also of our good friends Chuck Ramsey and Patsy Donovan. There's also a mystic midnight clock face on it and also the mysterious new secret password of the 1940 Flight Patrol, a password that's the key to greater mysteries that are still to come. And only those who are members will have the clues that are needed to figure out what it means. But wait, here's the most exciting feature of all. This new secret medal of membership has a three-blade spinning propeller on it. You spin it whenever you want to decide something, like who's going to be the first in any game, or who's going to wipe the dishes for Mother, or who's to be captain of the team. Well, there must be 100 different games you can play with this new spinning propeller medal. Boy, every fella and girl in town will wish they had one when they see yours. But now, here's how you can get one absolutely free. Just have Mother or Dad drive you over to your Skelly service station and tell your Skelly man that you want to join the new 1940 Flight Patrol. He'll give you your junior pilot's application card right away, and he'll send right in to Skelly headquarters for your spinning propeller medal of membership. That's all you do. You don't need any box tops or seals or package wrappers or anything else. You just see your Skelly man, and he'll fix you all up without one penny of cost to you. So have Mother or Dad drive you over to your Skelly service station tonight and join Captain Midnight's 1940 Flight Patrol. And now to Captain Midnight. Yesterday, you remember, Juan Pereda, owner of a vast estate with thousands of cattle, told Captain Midnight and Chuck how Ivan Shark, his daughter Fury, and his henchmen have taken his estate away from him. Shark also tortured Pereda to try to make him reveal the location of priceless family heirlooms. Just as he was finishing his story, the drone of a plane was heard. Our scene today continues. The plane comes closer, and Captain Midnight commands sharply.
It's a black plane, Chuck. Run the wireship and jump into the rear cockpit.
Okay, Red. I'll be there, Chuck.
Okay, and if he dies this way, give it to him with your machine gun.
But I'll know, Red.
Right.
That is one of Senor Chadwick's planes. They are all black, like the one you captured.
Yes, Senor, I know. How do you feel now?
I feel much better, Senor.
Can you walk?
Surely, Senor.
Oh, here, wait. Give me your hand. I'll pull you up.
You are very kind.
Now you're on your feet.
My knees. They're a little weak, but I will be all right.
Watch yourself. This fellow's driving.
Come, Senor, come. Let's get to the plane. It'll be safer there.
But this pilot in the sky, he will shoot at your plane.
Don't worry about that. We'll beat him off. We've got to be ready to take off if necessary.
He's getting closer. Shall I fire?
Yes, Chuck, yes. Give him a burst.
Not enough.
He doesn't like the
laugh
from your machine gun.
I'll say he doesn't.
Yeah, that's the way with these roughnecks, senor. They can give it, but they can't take it.
I wonder where he's going now.
I guess he'll turn around and go back.
No, he isn't.
Huh?
See, he's continuing south.
Maybe he's going up to the valley, to that other field.
These pilots are always flying around. One does not know where they go.
Oh, look. He's turning to the east.
Yes, you're right. I wonder what he's doing there.
Looks like he's going down behind that hill.
Yes. Senor Pareda.
Yes, senor?
Is there any landing place behind that hill?
Si, senor. There is a small plateau there on which an airplane could land.
There. He disappeared.
Yes. Looks like he went down all right.
If we're going to get out of here, now's our chance.
Senor, I guess you'd better come with us. We'll take you to a small field across the western ridge.
I know that field well. I leased some land there to some Americanos for mining.
Was it so? When was that?
Several years ago, but I understood they had given it off.
No, I don't believe they have. Because two of our friends, named Pinky Drake and Slim Poole, were sent down recently to investigate it.
Yes. We'd better get in the ship, Red, and be on our way.
You'll come with us, senor?
I would like to, but I must find some of my own men.
Well, where would they be?
Back in the mountains. I can show you.
Oh, gee, Red, that would be swell.
Well, now, wait a minute. Is there a place to land an airplane there?
Si, senor. I'm sure the airplane can land. At one time, there was a lake. Then it dried up.
Oh, gosh, Red, listen to that. A dried-up lake bed. Well, that should make a swell landing field.
Very well, senor. We will fly there. Are you sure you can find your way?
Si, I am certain. All my life, I have hunted and fished in these mountains and valleys. I could find my way around them with the blindfold over the eyes.
Good, let's go. I'll help you in the rear cockpit with Chuck. Here, let me take care of.
Thank you.
There you are.
Oh, gee, Red, we'll be carrying more weight than we should. It'll be bad if we have to fight any of those other planes in the air.
Yes, I realize that, Chuck. We'll have to make up in marksmanship what we lack in maneuverability. Well, I'll jump into the front cockpit and get the engine started.
Well, we're all set any time.
All right, here goes the starter.
Airplane. It is a wonderful machine. I like it very much.
So do we, senor. I don't know what we'd do without one.
I'm going to taxi out of ways, Chuck, and then take off to the north. All clear, Chuck?
All clear, Red.
We're off.
And now, our scene changes. To the south and east, there is a steep hill. And on the top of this hill is a rocky knoll, which overlooks the whole valley. At this point stands Ivan Shark, looking through a pair of powerful binoculars. Attending him are Fury Shark and Fang. Listen as Fury asks.
Can you see the plane, Father?
Yes, Fury. I see it very clearly.
Van Grip should be here very soon, Master.
He will be, Fang.
Is the plane's propeller turning, Father?
No, Fury. The plane stands with the propeller idle.
Can you see anyone near?
Just one moment, daughter. I must study this carefully.
For what reason did the plane land down
Please,
there?
Please, my dear Fury, do not interrupt me. Now I see. There are three men. One is standing and his head keeps turning. He is evidently on guard. Another one is kneeling, probably talking to the third who is sitting on the ground with his back against a tree.
Undoubtedly, he will be Senor Pareda.
It is he. There can be no doubt.
And the other two?
I cannot see the kneeling man very well. But the one standing up, yes. Yes, he is Chuck Ramsey.
Yes, surely. That settles it. The other one, he must be Captain Midnight.
I believe you are right.
Captain Midnight. What could have brought him here?
My dear Fury, you are falling down badly. There is only one magnet that draws the mysterious Captain Midnight here.
It is the great Ivan Shark.
Well said, Fang.
But what are we going to do, Father? Are we going to stand here idle and allow our enemies to plot against us?
As always, Fury, you are too impatient. Have you not learned your lesson by this time? Have you not observed me often enough to know there is a proper time for action and a proper time for inaction? Observe the beasts of the jungle. Are they leaping continually? What do you say, Fang? You were with me in India.
Great jungle beast. Spend much time in watchful waiting.
Did you hear that, Yuri? The clever one spends his time in setting the trap and then waiting while his enemies fall into it.
Are you laying the trap now for Captain Midnight? For if you are, it had better be a good one. Because by this time, that old fool of a parader will have told Captain Midnight his story.
And what difference will that make? For once, Captain Midnight has overstepped himself. This time, he is not fighting me on his own ground. He does not have a powerful force to aid him. I tell you, Fury, this time there shall be no mistake. Captain Midnight will never leave this valley alive.
Look, Master, look.
So I see, Fang. That must be Von Griff.
You wish to get Sanderson, too, but I do not see a second plane.
Perhaps now we have no more trouble. See? Von Griff dives on Captain Midnight.
Yes, Father. Von Griff is diving.
So I see, Fury. And Captain Midnight is sprung to his feet. Chuck Ramfield's running to the plane. Ah, he's almost there. He grasps the edge of the rear cockpit and jumps in.
Von Griff is getting lower. Oh, why doesn't he open fire?
Von Griff is an excellent marksman, my dear, and he does not waste bullets.
What is Captain Midnight doing?
He is helping Parada to his feet. Ah, Von Griff is close. He's about to open fire.
What has happened?
Chuck Ramsey has opened fire first. Von Griff is pulling away.
That spineless creature.
Parada is on his feet. Captain Midnight is helping him to the plane. Von Griff is coming toward us. He's going to land on the forest plateau below. Come, we will run to meet him.
We did, you yellow cur.
Silence, Fury. I will reprimand Von Griff.
Ah, look here, Chief. You do not blame me for not going down to the hill of lead, do you? I would never reach the ground alive.
But your plane would have crashed into young Ramsey and perhaps into Captain Midnight, too.
Maybe you're right. But what good would that do me? You promised me a lot of money for this deal, and I want to leave to enjoy it. Anyway, they will not escape.
Perhaps you are right. Where's Sanderson?
I sent him over to see what is going on across the street.
Good. Where will he meet you?
At our secret meeting.
Splendid. Now then, Von Griff, listen closely. Captain Midnight has taken one chance too many. He must never leave here alive.
He is not going to. Don't worry about that.
Well, what's to prevent his flying away?
Have no fear, my dear. Now that he has listened to Parada's story and knows that I am here, you could not drive him away.
Master is right. Captain Midnight will stay to punish.
As Rossman reported.
Yes, as he has, Chief. The cabin on the edge of the field across the ridge is completely surrounded by our men. No one will get out.
Don't forget, Zollinger is undoubtedly a prisoner inside.
Rossman knows that, and we'll be careful.
We've got everything under control, Von Griff. But we can't afford to make any slips. You...
Yes, Father! It's back to Peter!
So I see, Fury. Get ready, Von Griff. You must take off at once.
Shall I attack him in the air?
No. Captain Midnight is too good a pilot, and young Ramsey is too good a shot. One single seater can't handle them. We can't afford to take any chances. And if the ridge and land, then will come your chance, Von Griff. Only then. Get him as he is landing. It'll be a simple matter to capture the others in the cabin.
Captain Midnight is as good as dead right now.
Well, does Captain Midnight realize the danger he's in? He certainly is unaware that Ivan Shark's men have surrounded the cabin where his friends have taken refuge. The net drawn by Ivan Shark is drawing closer and closer. Tune in tomorrow to Captain Midnight. And now, here's a very important tip for every fellow and girl who's joining Captain Midnight's new 1940 flight patrol. When you call at your Skelly service station to join, the first thing you get is your official junior pilot's application card. Now, be sure to hold on to that, because, and here's my secret tip, there are some very important words on the back of that card that will help you solve a hidden mystery. I can't tell you about it now, but it's going to happen real soon. So now, if there are any of you fellows and girls who have not yet joined Captain Midnight's new 1940 flight patrol, this is what to do. Have mother or dad drive you over to your Skelly service station and tell your Skelly man you want to join the 1940 flight patrol and get your free spinning propeller medal of membership. Your Skelly man will do all the rest. Remember, it doesn't cost you a penny. So get in on the fun. Join up tonight. Now, don't forget to tune in again tomorrow, same time, same station, for further transcribed adventures of Captain Midnight. Brought to
to you by the Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Jobbers and Dealers. Can Captain Midnight escape this new trap Ivan Shark is setting for him? And what about Ma and Patsy Donovan and Pinky Drake and Slim Poole? Be sure to listen tomorrow. Until then, this is Don Gordon, your Skelly Man, saying goodbye and...
Happy landing!
Two episodes back-to-back from October of 1939, first from the 17th and then from the 18th, enjoying some adventure with Captain Midnight. When we return, we'll delve into some crime classics with the seven-layered arsenic cake as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Crime Classics was a neat little series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land from every time, as the program billed itself. It came to CBS in September of 1953, and the host was the fictitious Thomas Highland, played by Lou Merrill, and described as a connoisseur of crime, a student of violence, and a teller of murders. Production crew was among radio's finest. Elliot Lewis, producer-director, created the show from his large personal library of crime cases. Those cases range from 17th-century murder to the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with crime classics and the case of the seven-layered arsenic case from October of 1953. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland. With another true story of crime. Listen.
That was a cake baker breaking an egg and separating it. The white here, the yolk here. That was the last of 12 eggs to be separated. Next step in the recipe, beat the whites. Our cake baker is French and a good baker, too, so of course the cake will be of a lightness and a delicacy that... A cake that kisses back. Pour in the sugar... The flour. And now the ingredient that makes this cake different from all other cakes. You didn't hear anything because it was only a smidgen. And smidgens don't make any more noise. Not even a smidgen of arsenic, which that was. The noise comes later. So tonight, my report to you on the seven-layered arsenic cake of Madame Lafarge.
Crime Classics. A new series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. And now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland and his report on the seven-layered arsenic cake of Madame Lafarge.
France, as the fourth decade of the 19th century was closing, Louis-Philippe was on the throne. It was late summer of 1839, a season of unrest in Paris. In the dark alleys and dank cellars, a populace seethed and grumbled and wrote slogans in chalk on the cobblestones. Phrases such as Allons, à bas, en avant, au guillotine, which meant that in this stage people were either four things, or against things, or wanted them up, or down, or forward, or guillotine. This was in the city. But a few kilometers away in the country, in Glandier, it was peaceful. Summer was dying gently, and the folk took their cue from nature.
I'm quite sure she will be eminently satisfactory, madame. Her name is Marie Fortunée Capello. It is music, no? Marie Fortunée Capello.
Is she rich?
She has 25,000 francs in her own name.
Marie Fortunée Capello.
She will make a most excellent daughter-in-law to you, madame. I personally will guarantee it.
Huh?
I only meant that she is of quality. I personally knew her father, an artilleryman to Napoleon.
Stirring.
Who froze to his cannon outside of Moscow.
Commendable.
So, you see, you have come to the correct marriage broker. Madame.
Yes?
Your son, Charles, he has been apprised of the arrangement you are negotiating for him.
25,000 francs.
Yes, and her own trousseau.
He has been apprised.
Go to him then and tell him he is most fortunate. His beloved is not only of wealth, but of beauty. We are in agreement, madame?
She is in good health?
Excellent.
She has never been married before?
Never.
Then we are in agreement.
Therefore, if you please...
10% of 25,000...
2,500 francs.
Here. 3,000.
And 500 francs change. Madame.
Yes?
Your son, your fortunate son, Charles.
Yes?
He still spends his time at the blast furnace?
I cannot get him interested in anything else.
Strange. I only say this because I recall in my youth there were other things to do. Strolling, picnics in the bois.
My son, Charles, a young man who likes to spend his time at the blast furnace.
To each his own, eh, madame? Goodbye, madame.
Charles Lafarge was one of those rare individuals who was just a natural-born smelter, an unsung Bessemer, as it were. In his early youth, he evinced a healthy interest in iron things and tongs and anvils and blast furnaces. His father had died while fishing for bloaters in the Seine, this when Charles was 3 years old. His mother, a good woman, was quick to recognize her son's natural bent and indulged his talents. As a matter of fact, she invested nearly all her savings in a blast furnace and an ironmongery business for her son. Charles spent most of his waking hours in the shop, shaping things on the anvil, cooling metal, or what he liked best to do, smelting. He was doing that the day his mother broke the news to him.
Her name is Marie Fortuné Capello.
And he was 6'4" tall.
What of her?
You will marry her.
Why?
All young men get married. You'll have a wife now, son. Son.
Yes, Mama.
Come here to me, closer. I want to look at you.
At what do you look, Mama?
Nothing. You'd better get cleaned up.
And he did. Charles got cleaned up. He bathed, shaved, and got into the clothes of a gentleman of the country. He was introduced to his fiancée, made guttural noises of approval, and in a few hours they were married. The ceremony took place in the empty and dismal halls of the Lafarge castle. In attendance were Mama Lafarge and one Denis Barbier. Denis, it should be mentioned, was an employee and bosom friend to Charles. And it must be assumed that Denis was happy for his friend for having brought such a winsome and lovely creature into an abode usually areek with odors of sulfur and slag. At the end of the ceremony, Denis offered his arm to Mama, and they left. Then, this is what happened to the newlyweds.
But it frightens me.
Frightens?
Please.
Frightens? How?
The terrible heat of it.
Well, it is a fire. It is hot. How frightens?
Please.
Look to me.
Yes?
This bar, this iron bar. You see it bending. Look. Why did you not look?
I do not know.
My mama said to me you would do what I say you do.
I will try.
Well, then look to me.
Yes?
This metal piece, this round metal piece, you see?
Yes.
For you.
What?
For you.
I don't...
To lock about you if you will run away from me.
A shackle?
Do not run away from me.
Oh, don't touch me.
Husband to you.
¶¶
It is not your husband, madame. It is I. It is Dennis. It is Dennis. Dennis.
What do you want?
Your husband sent me to speak with you. May I come in? Your husband said I was to enter your rooms and to speak with you. Thank you, madame.
To speak to me of what?
Madame, how long has it been since you've been here in the chateau?
You know it. 4 months more.
Such joy you have brought to all of us. Of course, we have not seen much of you since you've locked yourself in your room, for the most part. But if this makes you happy, all of us are happy.
Say what you wish to say and get out.
I bring sad news.
What?
Your husband has gone to Paris alone. I will turn my back while you weep. You finish? Oh, madame, you look so radiant after a good cry.
When did he go?
This morning.
Oh.
He has a plan for a blast furnace, a new principle.
My husband.
He was introduced to pencil and paper just last week, and already he has the theory for a new furnace. Remarkable, is it not?
I wish him well.
He asked me, shy man that he is, to say another thing. The 25,000 francs, which is banked in your name, he wishes it.
Hmm?
Where are you, madame? Poor. Where are you, madame? I would give it to him. But just a while ago, below at the furnace, he fashioned a thing. Oh, it's diabolical, the equipment your husband can make. Before he left, he lifted it up with both hands and said, just my wife's size. Ugh.
And if I give it to him?
He will have compassion for you. He says only that. He will honor your desire to remain alone.
Very well.
Ah, you are a good wife. Oh, a word.
Yes?
I, too, have compassion for you. You must understand that.
Compassion? Why?
Your husband is a brute. He is a brute. He is also an imbecile.
Yes.
He is better off if he is dead.
Yes.
What?
I said yes. He is better off if he is dead.
Of course he is. Madame, madame, I take your leave. Madame, Madame Lafarge, open quickly, open.
Monsieur Denis.
Madame.
What are you doing in my chamber?
A terrible thing, so terrible.
What are you talking about?
What she has said.
Who?
The wife of your son. She said she...
What? Oh, what is it?
That she wished your son dead.
I'm sure every wife in the world has wished her husband dead at one time or another.
But the way it was said.
How?
With the kind of madness, with the curling of the lips, the clawing of the hand, with hate, with purpose. I wish my husband dead, she said. The heavens give me strength to make it so, she said.
No.
Yes.
This banter kept up a few moments more. Then Mama became firmly convinced that she had a potential murderess for a daughter-in-law. Dennis, on the other hand, went to the pharmacy and bought some arsenic. If you happen to pick up any standard almanac of France for the year 1840 and look up the climate for the first week of the year, you will read Il fait froid. That's the French way for putting it, that there were blizzards and snows and hails and sleets and cold rains. As a matter of fact, this was one of the most miserable weeks in the annals of French weather. It is only legend, but it's worth mentioning. A freak storm up from the provinces caused a fall of frozen bloaters on the banks of the Seine. And northward, in the town of Glandier, the blizzard swirled bleakly around the parapets of the Lafarge Castle. But on the main floor, in a kitchen lighted by a roaring blaze and warmed by a scene of domestic enterprise...
No, you must take the dough and roll it. There, on the table of my aunt.
Your aunt must have been too generous, Madame Lafarge, to have given you so much furniture.
Knead the dough, daughter-in-law. And now I must ask you a question.
What is it?
Do you hate my son, your husband?
I will answer you. At times I do hate him.
This I can understand. But do you wish him dead?
Oh, no. Oh, perhaps in a burst of fury, yes, but... Oh, no, he is... He...
Yes?
Like a child. Like a small child.
Dennis said...
What?
Nothing. Dennis is so quick to take offense. He cares so much for my son, have you noticed? Truly a friend, truly.
I feel for your son. Somehow, right now, I feel for your son a warmth. So the baking of these cakes, which I will send to him in Paris.
I am the most fortunate of mothers-in-law.
I have resolved to give my marriage every chance to forget what has happened. Therefore, I will do as my husband bids.
You will send him the money?
All of it that is in my name.
25,000 francs?
To the sou. I will send it along with the cakes.
Marie.
Yes, dear mother-in-law?
You are good. It is important that Charles build his blast furnace. When that is done...
Never mind. Here, will you put the dough in the pan? There should be enough to fill those five small ones.
Gladly.
I will wash my hands and write Charles a note.
You'll find the pen on the desk of my aunt. And when you are finished, we will put it with the cakes and the money. And Dennis will mail all of it. Let me kiss you.
And they offered each other their cheeks. Then Marie washed her hands and wrote her husband a tender note. Madame Lafarge put the cakes, five small ones, into the oven, which her aunt had willed to her, and dozed for a while in her aunt's favorite chair. Then the cakes were ready. They were iced and wrapped. Into the parcel was then inserted an envelope containing 25,000 francs and a few words of encouragement and endearment and new resolution. Then...
Dennis?
Madame and Madame.
Dennis, take this parcel and mail it to Monsieur Lafarge in Paris. It contains cakes and money, so mail it with dispatch. And Dennis, my mother-in-law and I would appreciate an opportunity to become more... Well, you may spend a few days where you wish, Dennis. Not here. Not here, Dennis.
Not here, Dennis.
Oh, Charles Lafarge got the parcel all right. It was mailed all right, and he got it. But if you think for one moment that Dennis was there when it arrived, you're right.
So, my dear friend Charles, I thought that you would be lonesome in Paris. So many of the young men get lonely in Paris.
You are good.
So, I thought to... Now, who could that be? Charles. Charles?
Now, who could that be?
May I see? I will see. Oh, well, thank you. A package for you, Charles.
A package?
Yes, it is. May I open it for you? I will open it for you. It's from Glandier, from your wife. What could it be?
I feel kindly toward my wife. Perhaps...
Yes?
When this of the blast furnace is done, when I get back to Glandier, I will...
A cake?
I like cake.
Such a large cake. And here, an envelope. Ooh, money.
How much?
Ah, 3,000 francs.
I hoped she'd send the 25.
Oh, there is a note here, too.
Read it to me.
Ah. Dear Charles, keep warm. Here is cake. Here is money. Your wife, Marie. Charles?
Yes?
May I cut a piece of cake for you? I will cut a piece of cake for you. Myself, I will eat none of it. My stomach is turning into a paunch.
It is a fine-looking cake.
Here. Eat. Do you like it? Is it good? Is it light?
Yeah. More.
What's the matter?
The cake lies against my heart.
Oh?
Painfully. With much pain.
Help! Help! My friend is sick! Doctor! Doctor! My friend has eaten a cake and he is sick! His wife sent him cake and he is sick!
His wife sent him cake and he became sick, Inspector. I do not wish to say it, but you forgive me, do you not? Yes, you do. I was in the presence of his wife when she said she wished her husband dead, that she thought him a brute and an imbecile, and she wished him dead. And then she sent me to buy arsenic for mice, she said. For mice. Then this cake comes to my friend Charles Lafarge, and he eats of it, and now he is dead. Inspector, you forced me to say it. I did not wish to say it, but you forced me.
Marie Fortuné Capello Lafarge was arrested on the charge of murder. She was put in prison in January 1841 and brought to trial in July. It is safe to say that this period was a time of travail, for Marie lost 40 pounds, her golden hair turned to silver, and her youthful complexion turned ashen. These, in the main, were observations made by Raoul Lessie, the George Garvey of the Fourth Estate of that day. Nor, during the trial, were the interrogations less unmerciful. She was asked, first of all, whether she loved her husband.
Less, perhaps, than other women. More, perhaps, than some.
And did she ever say she wished him dead?
No, not meaningly.
May I make a statement? My name is Denis Barbier. Charles Lafarge was my good friend. We addressed each other in the second person singular, familiar as two. I grieve for his death. I grieve that his widow has been placed in such a precarious position. Yet I am forced to say that I, Denis Barbier, friend of Charles Lafarge, did hear Marie Lafarge wish her husband dead meaningly.
You provoked me.
Poor little thing.
You did. You provoked me.
If you wish to say so, I will not disagree. Wife to my friend Charles Lafarge, now dead by poison.
Of arsenic, indeed, which Denis himself had purchased.
I myself purchased the arsenic and gave it.
It was for mice.
For mice, if you wish to say so. I will never disagree.
It was for mice.
For mice.
Ask my mother-in-law. Ask her.
Madame Lafarge.
Very well. I recall no mice. I run a clean chateau.
And your daughter-in-law says for mice. I say you killed my dear friend Charles Lafarge. Murderer!
No!
Murderer!
No!
Yes!
And what of the cake?
There were five small cakes.
There was but one cake, a large cake of seven layers.
Ask my mother-in-law. Ask her.
Madame Lafarge.
I do not remember them.
You yourself put them in those five pans.
I do not remember. Murder.
No.
Yes.
And what of the money?
From the bank, I took 25,000 francs and put them in the parcel.
There was only 3,000 francs in the parcel. Murderer!
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 Marie Lafarge was found guilty and sentenced to life imprisonment at hard labor. Also, occasional exposures in the pillories. Then, Mama, 12 years later on her deathbed, suddenly...
I remember. I remember. It was not a seven-layered cake. It was five small ones which Marie sent to my son. Something must be done.
And something was done. Marie Lafarge, who had already served 12 years... had her sentence reduced to just five more years. Then she was sent to a home. Then she killed herself.
Madame Lafarge, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann. And the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Eve McVeigh was heard as Marie, Irene Tedrow as Madame Lafarge, Joseph Kearns as Dennis, Edgar Barrier as Noonie, and William Conrad as Charles. Roy Rowan speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
From October of 1953, it's been crime classics and the case of the seven-layered arsenic cake. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week at the same time, and why not invite a friend to listen? Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
Preceding program copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.